Okay, so the last models we wanted to see to explain the discussion of the Amiarites were briefly the mystical model and then the metaphorical model, okay? So the mystical model, very quickly, if you look at 11 in the Petach so he says, B'yom HaKippurim Shechaliyot B'Shabbat, Peirush Rabbeinu HaArizal. The Arizal said, Shama'aretz pogmim ba'asiya. No, it's from same as 2 weeks ago. Ve'ino kol kol chamur. Ach b'Shabbat, Ha'asiya ole l'malo v'amot nikshareim yachad. Af amaretz kishecholit b'Shabbat, pogim atzia ad ha'atzilut. Said, look. The Arizal thinks there are four circles to the world. The four worlds, essentially. The Olam Yitzira, the Olam Atzila, whatever. I don't need to get you into the Kabbalah. During the week, he can only damage the lower worlds. But on Shabbat, when like all the worlds are connected in whatever way that they are, his sin has greater power. And therefore, it affects the world. Atzila.
Is this the Amiarits again?
Yeah, that one. And he says, that's why the Gemara is saying that Yom HaKippurim Shechaliyot B'Shabbat, that's when she comes, because he's like damaging, right? It doesn't mean literally. It means like, you should stop him from damaging the upper world. I obviously understand deeply what this means. I have a vivid image in my mind of what it means that those worlds are now being damaged. No, no, apparently the lower world's not a big deal.
Sunday, you don't kill them.
Correct. Good. Now it's all clear.
I missed like
good.
The first few words, but that was in the bathroom. What are we doing?
Continuing the Amaris thing.
So what was the last thing that we did before? Like, how, what is this talking about? It's saying,
we have two more pro.
Why you should kill him on Shabbos or Holly Oath?
Why you should kill him on Shabbos?
Yeah.
You should.
I thought he just said to wait till Sunday.
No,
no,
no.
You shouldn't wait till Sunday.
No, it's because on Sunday they only damage the world of the Yassiya. But on Yom Kippur, Shabbat, they're being pogame the world. Right, right, Ravashi? Don't you know what that means? I don't know. I didn't say I know what it meant. It's the Petach and I'm quoting the Arizal. I'm like, just nod. Yes, those. Okay. So that's another derech you could take. If you know what it means, you can explain it to me later. I don't know. Maybe I'll, you know, this is the type of thing that I feel like when I'm 40, you know, I can fast for a few days, you know, and maybe then God will enlighten my eyes. What?
But you have to learn it from your rabbi, Dr. Prophet.
Fine, but I don't understand it, so I need to.
Right, but even so,
I'll write a letter under my pillow, and I'll daven to God to be granted a vision.
What is the point of Pirush Mishnah of the Rambam?
What? According to the Arizal.
No, in the third line, why did you mention the Pirush Mishnah of the Rambam?
What? The third line he connects this to, remember I mentioned last week briefly that the Gemara says that you trust Amiharitz on Shabbat because Emat Shamat Aleihem.
Oh, yeah.
So he says, aha, that's the Kabbalistic idea behind this, because on Shabbat you're tapping into different worlds and it changes your sins.
As the Rambam says.
Well, that's just explaining the Mishnah.
Yeah.
But it's funny how it puts in the Rambam.
Now I understand. Yeah, Allah. Okay, but what I really wanted to show you was what does it look like to develop a metaphorical read. So, if you remember, I talked about all the way at the beginning of the year when we did methodological overview of how to read Agadata, I said that in certain ways the Maharal is picking up where the Rambam left off, right? Because he is obsessed with this metaphorical read. On the other hand, the types of metaphors that he puts in, pachot. This Gemara, as you can see, the reason people think that, you know, the Maharal in many ways is doing what the Rambam said he was going to do, never did, is because if you see the length, and I'm going to show you that the Maharal isn't the first person to do it. It's not like you don't find it in earlier, like, borderline Rishonim and stuff like that, like the Re-Ibn Shwib in 22. But if you look at just the length of the Maharal, okay, so you have my sources, you can see. Here's Netivot Olam, Perek Tedvav. Starts here. Remember, this is font 11, in, or
oh,
maybe
sorry.
10,
like
right? Tivet Olam, page 2, page 3, and this is the Bera Gola, which is also the Maharal. Continuing here and here. And these are the footnotes on the Maharal showing all the other places. That. And these are only some of them, because as you can tell, this entire chapter is on it, and I gave you about 5 footnotes, and out of 152 at least, because that was the last one I stopped on. You see that top shelf over there with the red books?
Yeah.
That's the Maharal, all of them. All of them. That's all the Maharal. Maharal was a prolific writer.
Okay.
He wrote a lot. A lot. A lot. About everything. And he's amazing. Amazing. And he writes a lot. Very clear thinker. I never really read him systematically until last year. Until one of our most demanding students pushed me to read the Maharal.
Not me.
No,
Zach.
Zach and I had a chavrusa in the Maharal. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and that was a lot of fun because I was like, "Thank you for forcing me to read the Maharal because I wouldn't have done it." And he is incredible. It's unbelievable what the man did.
The Maharal or Zach?
Yes. 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 Both are amazing, yes. And it makes sense that I would learn the Maharal with Zach, yes.
I'd buy it.
Yep, okay. So before we look at the Maharal, you'll see the metaphorical things you already have in people like the Re Ibn Shweib, who are, of course, you know, the first people I'm sure you all go to when you are trying to understand anything. So the Re Yoshua Ibn, I believe it's Shweib, Schwab, Shweib. In English, they spell it S-H-U-A-I-B. In Hebrew, as you could, Shweib, I don't know. He's a Talmud of the Rajba.
Oh, Schwab.
He's a Talmud of the Rajba, so probably not. Schwab is like a German name. He's a Talmud of the Rajba. So, Spain, 13th century. So, 13th and 14th. So, he's like late Rishon. So, he writes, Ra'ui lefarej b'tami siro. Ki Hashem bara kol hanivreim atachtonim l'tzorech ha'adam. God created all for man. Kihilu vado mehem magid baro, because only man can praise God. V'af al pichen lo etir lehem mitchila b'achila rakat samach. Right, he's coming down the meat line. Right, why is it that that Ami Aretz are not allowed to eat meat? It says, well, the world was created. What?
Why can't they eat meat?
That's what we're answering.
Oh, sorry, we said this already a few weeks ago.
Yes, they can't eat meat. This is the one that bothers you, not stabbing them in Yom Kippur? Meat? Exactly. That's the real reason why I'm a vegetarian. It's just I'm convinced I'm an Amaret. So, you know, at least my kapara should be that I just don't have meat. That's really what it is. Exactly. So he says, so he said, but what's the logic? He said, look, when man was first created, he was only allowed to eat vegetation. Lola balei nefesh, because you have a parsha bereishit. That's bereishit. Shneimar, ini netati lachem kol yisav zorei zera. V'kasher haya b'mabul shenitzalu b'zchut shel Noach. And then, when animals were saved by Noach, v'hikrav mehem karbon, he brought a sacrifice for them, v'hila ratzon, and God said, great. Hitir lehem ashrita, they were allowed to eat meat. K'mosha amr kol remetz asher uchai lachem yelachla. Hitira basar litzorech adam vaasar adam shia nevesh. So they were allowed to eat the meat, but not the blood. Vamarsha tielek aparashin roi lebal nefesh yochal nefesh. It's not right for a bal nefesh to eat a soul, right? And the blood is whatever it means in the soul. The soul is in the blood. Most kulan lael, because all souls are for God. Kemosher katuv ruach adakol. Kemotze kemotze v'nemar pesachim amaretz asher lechal basar. She'eino adam alamet. So he said, what does it mean that an Amaret can't eat meat? He's not really a person. It's like, ve'eino motar al shar balechayim she'ilchem v'rav. He's no better than other animals. So what does he deserve to eat meat? Sha'adomim nishtabe l'samech. He said, look, the non-movable things like plants and stones, they are in, sorry, stones serve plants, somech. Somech l'margish, the plants to those that feel. V'margish l'shichli, and those who feel to those who think. But someone who's basically an animal, an animalistic, like an Amaretz, the animals don't serve him. And he said, right, animals are also like a spark of intelligence. V'hinu nefesh gemurah v'tzavanim v'chein yesh la dat lebrach v'nanadu v'chach harnot yesh la mekira gedolu v'alein, and therefore they understand their masters. K'mo l'klavim sheish ben avav v'hekar l'adonayhem, like animal, like dogs who love their masters. V'chein l'yonim dada v'hekiram. And he says, furthermore, and the food also returns to the body of the eater. And if this animalistic guy eats more animals, he'll become more animalistic. You know, you'll just bring him farther and farther down. So here you get the more metaphorical read, which is, what does it mean you shouldn't eat? I mean, I guess I'd call it metaphorical, right? Because it's not right. You're like, Ezra's like, no, I call that literal. You're an animal. You're literally an animal, right? Yeah.
I mean, halachically.
Well, the thing is, French eats man from animals is mine, too. It doesn't use
but that's
mind.
What he's saying, right? So it's a metaphorical read. He's saying, reason is because, yeah, you're basically an animalistic.
Well, it's literally. He's saying literally they can't eat.
Yes, yeah, so in that sense, he may not be quite literal. I'm not sure.
How about if he's an animal, then we should be shocked at him?
I assume that's part of it, yeah.
And then we should eat them. Because it's animal.
No, you didn't chef them. You stabbed them. They're not, you didn't do shechita.
Oh, so if you do shechita.
No, no, Nevela. Please. Nevela. You're not the first person to ask me this morning, this today. And I just told the other people, I said, go look at the Gemara, and Ksuva Stav Samach, and look at the Ra'a, and look at the Rambam on that Gemara, and then come back to me.
Did they?
No.
I don't know. And they thought I was joking. But no, that's where you should look.
You know, I actually had a thing. Technically, human breast milk is not meat or dairy, and it's kosher. So I want to start a business where I make cheeseburgers with cheese with the human breast milk.
That's disgusting.
But it's kosher.
No one will own that.
It's halakhically
so I know people who do actually put it in their cooking for that reason.
What?
Really?
Yes.
That's nasty.
I didn't say I ate it.
Give it to other people too.
I didn't say that either. But I know people who do this. I don't know. No, because I think it's because they told Ora.
That is how you were.
Why would they tell her that?
Because it was someone who likes halacha and knows Ora appreciates halacha. You said it as a joke.
I did. I know. I didn't think people would actually do it.
And then you would be wrong.
Because people will be successful. Business will be successful.
Okay. Of course you do. Of course you do.
At that point, just make yourself the account from the same read Sierra, and then it's also
part of it. If I could figure out what I would, but I can't. No, it's also anyway.
Yeah, he's going to make the business of, I'm going to have the Basar B'chalav of, you know, from human milk, which is parev, and what's the classic meat? That is
chicken. No, ben
pakua. Correct. Very good. Parev cheeseburger, parev milk, parev meat. What? Ben pakua.
Wait, what? I've never heard of this.
Good. We're not going to go down that road. Okay. Fine. We don't have time. If you see the Maharal, we don't have time. Okay. Let's try to get, are we going to read all the Maharal inside? No. But I want to show you what a systematic metaphorical read looks like because, look, do you have to agree with everything Maharal says? No. Is it awesomely impressive? Yes. So impressive. It's not normal how impressive the Maharal is.
I want to start a
Habrusa on the mouth. That's so cool. Okay. So he says, so look at 23, okay? So first he quotes the don't eat meat. Yeah. It says why. What does that mean? Ki achila basar hu oser basar ad sheino nimtza. She ocho to ad shein metziut lo. V'davar zem mora ki madrega radon linza bal chai. Eating meat makes the meat that it no longer exists. Oh, very deep. Right? Because you eat it until it's destroyed. And that shows that in man, there is no, right? He takes it metaphorically. Why? What does it show, the fact that when you eat something, it's gone? That when a man eats meat, the animalness is gone because the man, right? He's a man, and the animal nature is gone. This shows you that what in the intellect there is no animalistic nation, the animalistic expression, right? It's the mind. So tamid chacham can eat meat, and he can make the animal not exist. Why? Because in his intellectual world, when he eats it, the animal will no longer exist. And Amoritz doesn't have that madrega. Level. Lo marki madrega Amoritz. Lo nimta abal chai. Sherei ein al Amoritz asecha elokei. The Amoritz doesn't have divine intelligence.
Like, I looked up the term, it refers in some cases to people who are unlearned. Like, once again, have we really gotten down to what is an Amoritz? Because even last time,
yeah, I'm not sure that he cares. Lefir Amoritz asr lecho basar. Right, and he said that was the same reason that Adam Arishon wasn't allowed to have meat.
Because he didn't have the intelligence?
But Adam and Amar?
No, but he says because he was made from the earth, so he was still Chomri. Okay, that's literally. Okay, next paragraph. He says, okay, let's continue the metaphor. Why can you stab the Amoretz on Yom Kippur Shechal Yos B'Shabbat? Right? So, first he quotes the Rif, who says, right, he says, Harbei Matmiyem Alzeh. He says, people are shocked about this. And they gave a lot of commentaries. Right? People are shocked. Be shocked.
Shock.
Yeah, not as good as when you were actually shocked. Okay. Fine.
Like,
you know.
Killing people wears off.
So he says, so he quotes the riff, and then he says, I'll tell you what it means. Hapir shabar. Kimitzad asher hu amaretz ayamut l'nacher. Avogav devade osr l'nachor amito chay mita. Here it's clearly metaphorical. He says, you're obviously not allowed to kill it.
Oh, you're not.
But from the vantage point, the aspect of his being Amoretz, fundamentally, you are allowed to stab him. Like, Lemaisa, you can't. But the essence of the Amoratzus in him, you're allowed to, right? He said, and why can't you kill him? You're not going to like this. You can't kill him because he could be a Talmud Chacham. He's a Talmud Chacham in potential. But mitzad, the fact that he's Amoretz, Ra'ui to kill him. Yeah. Right? So therefore, he's a Talmud Chacham b'koyach. Right? Very Aristotelian. He's a Talmud Chacham in potential, but not in actuality. Right? But from the vantage point of being Aretz, mutter l'nachram yom kippurim. Why? V'zep mora al p'tichut gadol she'ein lo hachiyut rak mitzad ha'davar shu b'koach elav. Because that shows the lowness that he only has life in potential, right? Very Aristotelian, right? His life is in potential, right? It's, right? It does not, is not actualized, right? His life is in potential. Oh, yes, his life force. Correct, because without that would be life. Yes, this is like, yeah. Right, and he says, right. This is classic Aristotle, or right, that there's a difference between in potential, right, potency, right, and actuality. He's saying a Talmud Chacham is alive in actuality, and a Ma'aretz is only alive in potential.
So are babies animals? Have the potential of becoming human?
And then, of course, in case you were wondering, by the way, in case you were wondering if he meant this. Guys, in case you're wondering if he means this, he says, "V'hu perush emet ein bo safek." It is true with no doubt. And then he says, okay, but remember I said how careful he's going to be? He said, what about the bracha thing? He said, that's meaning to tell you that Amaretz ein bo davar klal ve'ino nachshav l'klum. Right? It's to tell you he's worth nothing. Nothing! Why? This is quite harsh, because he said, look, you want me to tell you outside what he says? He said, no, I'll read it, because you're not going to believe me. He says, L'kach ilu amar mut l'shachtem. He said, listen, if I said you could shech them, hayamam shmashayesh ba'ma'aret davar ma'ki behem anivar l'shchita, it would imply that he has some worth in his life, because an animal has a value in his life. He's born for shchita, right? But the ama'aret is not, kemosh, right? Just like he says, so behem l'shchita. Right? And that's why shechting an animal needs a bracha. Aval ma'aret she'enu b'chal ha-metziu legamre. He doesn't really exist, because he only exists in potential.
Right,
I've got to say, I happen to Mordecai knows that I'm actually, like, working my way, finally, from beginning to end to the Summa Theologica, and, like, I'm just imagining this in Aquinas. Idiots only exist in potential, right? They only have potency, but they have no actuality. But that's actually what he says. Anyways. Summa Theologica is the magnum, unfinished magnum opus of Thomas Aquinas, right? Which is the... Ooh, look. And then he says, wait, I'm not done. He says, sorry, wait, guys. And he says, v'hugarua mina behema sheishba davar masu. He's worse than animals, because animals exist. He just doesn't exist. Yep, he only exists in potential. Yep. Okay. Next one. Why can't you escort him on the way? What? So the Gemara says, no, you can't escort him. Like, you can't walk with him on a path. So he says, well, the Gemara says, he doesn't care about his own life. Why should he care about yours? So what? No, he says, you would think that's what he's going to say. He says, no. Perish ki ha'aretz eino davuk b'chayim. He refuses to cling to life, which is Torah. Right? He doesn't cling to Torah. So we suspect him of actual murder. And then he says, what does it mean you can rip him open like a fish? He says, what does it mean that you should rip him open like a fish? And what does it mean when Rikiva says that he wanted to bite a Talmud Chacham like a donkey? So he says, well, when it says rip him like a fish from the back, he says, "Perish hashochet min atzaver in poel kol kach hamisa." Shreim shachad bo shnei marov shnei mariu nechshav kmo chay l'chol davar. Va'achrek meitz ma'atzmo. He said, "When you shecht something, sometimes you don't kill it; you put it in a fatal state and it dies by itself. Right? You don't want to do that."
Wait, so does that mean fish? They don't have
sheets. Aval amaretz mutzal karo kedag, but amaretz you should rip like a fish. Upoel bo mita legamrei. We're telling you, rip him in such a way that he will immediately be dead. That's because he doesn't deserve existence. Right? Doesn't it deserve existence? Right? And that's why you can rip him like a fish.
Does this mean fish don't have any value in their life since they don't sell fish?
I guess so. I don't know. I'm not an expert in the Maharal's view on fish. I'm sure, look, put it this way. I would be very not surprised if the Maharal has a long discussion of fish in the book somewhere, because he has very profound conversations about everything.
What about babies?
What about them? I don't know. Maybe. In potential. And then he says, okay, what about when the Gemara says that if you marry your daughter off to an Amaretz, it's like putting her in front of a lion, because lions eat their meat with no shame. So, Soto Ame Aretz sleep, like, basically marital rape with no shame. And then the Gemara says, and if the Amaretz didn't eat us for business, they would kill us. Right? So he says, that's also metaphorical. Perish Yachomri Mitnaged L'Seichel. Materialism, stands in fundamental opposition to the intellect, to the mind. Ad She'itz L'Chomrin Mitziud El Seichel. To the point where they don't exist in each other's presence because they're opposites. Right? So he says that's what it means. When they say, let me bite them like a chamor, right? It means, and it's going to break the bones, is shuma abed oto, because it's going to destroy it. Right? Shuma chamor ma'abed ha'etzim adam ha'sichol. Ya'chein mitziyot lo legamri, ke'etzim u'ikar kiyum adam. It wants to break the bone. It wants to destroy the essence of wisdom. And then he goes on that it's like fire and water. And then he says, why does Rabbi Meir compare him to a lion? Because a lion is really physically strong, right? And he says, yeah, once you give up on the intellect, you express your nature, your physical nature, intensely, because, you know, your mind, you're not expressing. And therefore, if you marry of your daughter to Amun Aretz, it doesn't work, because the Zivug, you're trying to combine two opposites, right? Your daughter, who comes from the world of the intellect, And there's Amaretz that comes from the world of?
Not in the light.
The physical, right? Okay, next paragraph. Why is it that if you learn Torah in front of Amaretz, it's like sleeping with your, it's like sleeping with your betrothed in front of him. He says, because the Torah is betrothed to Talmidei Chachamim, right? But the Torah is not for them. And therefore, it's not meant to be united to them, right? So it'd be like sleeping in front of, right, with your wife in front of someone who has no connection to it. Why do Amei Aretz hate you? Right? Even more than the Goyim. Because he said the Goyim may also be physical, right? But it's not as physical as the Amei Aretz, because the Amei Aretz has the potential to be a Talmid Chacham, and he hasn't actualized it. Right? He accepted the Torah, and he didn't, and he chose not to manifest it. Okay?
What if he doesn't have the access to the education?
And then, six things. I understand that you're angry. But I'm trying to show you what a metaphorical read of the whole Gemara looks like. Then he says, what about the six things that we said about Amaretz? Don't accept testimony. Don't give him testimony. Don't tell him secrets. Don't make him a apotropos, right? In charge of staka. Don't travel with him. And some say don't announce his lost object. And the Tanakhama says, no, sometimes he'll have a child who's a Talmid Chacham, so you should give him that. She said, all six of these show that the Amaretz is far from the intellectual plane. Right? And what do they each represent? So it says, what does it mean, emotion lo edud? Because giving someone testimony is yidiyah. Right? You're giving someone information that he doesn't have an intellect. Right? He's not manifesting his intellect. Right? So he'll just accept it without thinking about it. Why can't he testify? Because there's no truth unless you have without the intellect. Then he gets into, okay, so why do we say both? I'll skip that a little bit. Why don't you tell him secrets? Because secrets imply that you have a level that is not superficial. And he is superficial. Right, that's what it means. Don't tell him secrets because the person is superficial, right? Why don't you make him an apotropos or right in charge of orphans or in charge of tzedaka? Because if you're purely physical, you can't lead others and influence others. And what does it mean that you don't escort him? We already saw that before. Why don't you announce his lost object? Because again, right? He reads this metaphorically. Because materialism is revealed and intellectual things are hidden, right? And therefore, a lost object, there's an element of hiddenness, but this person is superficial. Anything which is not explicit doesn't relate to him, and therefore, you don't have to give him his lost object. I'll skip down a little bit. Then he gives a second peirush to what does it mean that you're allowed to stab him on Yom Kippur? He gives a second possibility. Maybe Rudy will like this more. Maybe it's not that he doesn't exist, that he's a person in potential. He said, no, maybe he's a person. He's just not a Baal Torah. So you can't kill him as a person, but...
since he's a Baal Torah, technically.
Right? And then he says, what about a baby? Everyone's question. Well, he says he's also a Talmud Chacham in potential, right? But he said, so maybe you shouldn't stab him. He said, well, logically, based on this logic, you still should, right? I guess theoretically. And he says, why do we say all of these crazy things? To tell you the gedol gnut uganai amaretz, to tell you how bad the amaretz are. That's the point of all of this, right? So this is just an example of what it means to have a systematic, metaphorical read. And you see that literally goes through every line, and he, right? Right, and again, he does this again in the Ber Hagola. Admittedly, not every pshat he says there is the same. Right, so like there he says that the meat is because, right, how much is he connected to the earth? Let's see. A lot of these are similar. And I gave you here also, if you look, right, the footnotes where this is something that he systematically says in many, many other places. But because, you know, I'm really starting to... I'm going to suffice with having shown you the type of way that you could read it. And that's what a metaphorical read looks like, okay? So now we've seen about six different ways of understanding Gemara: literal, exaggeration, only sometimes with the Chachamim, or a purely metaphorical read, right, which is getting into the ideas of what the essence of what it means to be a person, and the like. Okay, briefly, because I feel myself, I'm running out of energy here, so two more points, and then next week we'll do something new. One is just very briefly on the Rabbi Kiva point, and then I'll take some questions, okay? The Gemara here says that Rabbi Kiva said... Correct. So the problem that the Rishonim have is, wasn't he like a good frum boy, right? Even though he was an Amoretz, right? That was what Rachel saw in him, and that's why she wanted him to go and go to yeshiva, right?
Yeah, he had a lot of potential to become.
Right? And that's what the Gemara says in Ketubot Samach Bet, that she saw that, right? Right? The Ben Kabbalah said, Ave, Chazit Nibarte, David Sneo Male, right? She saw that he was Tsanua, right? So what's the, so you tell me, how could you answer it?
She thought she actually
did. No. Okay, so one possibility is different stages in life, right? The Ritva just says, look, there was a stage in life where he was an Amoretz and a bad person, and he hated Tamil Chamim, and then he was Amoretz, good person, and that was what gave him the Petach to become the Tamil Chacham. That's the Ritva. Tosvot says... Rabbeinu Tam says no. He was Shomer Mitzvot, but he legitimately hated Talmidei Chachamim because he thought they were arrogant. Because they were arrogant because they hated Amei Aretz. Mm-hmm. Right? Meaning everything we talked about here. One second. I gave you one more shot here, but I need to get a bigger version of it because it was really, it's small. One second. Just because. Rega. But yeah, if you're more interested in the Maharal, you can go and read everything else. But I thought it was fascinating just to see someone who did it systematically. Okay, so I found in the back of the Masifta, in their Kaftor Beferach section, the Omer Letzion, who I have no idea who that is, said the following. He says there's two types of Talmidei Chachamim. Okay. So there are two types of reasons that Amoretz hate Talmidei Chachamim. The Amoretz hate Talmidei Chachamim because they hate Talmidei Chachamim, and there are Amoretz hate Talmidei Chachamim because they think Talmidei Chachamim aren't living up to their own standards, right? They think they're charlatans, right? And he says that Rabbi Kiva was correct, right? And he said, why did he say he wanted to break their bones? So he reads it metaphorically, that he wasn't because he hated them. He loved Torah, but he wanted to break them because he saw their etzem, right? He saw that their essence wasn't real. Right, they weren't true Talmidei Chachamim, and he wanted to break through, which means he was always super from. It wasn't that he hated Talmidei Chachamim. He hated fake Talmidei Chachamim, and that's why he was zocheh to be a Talmid Chacham. Okay, great. A brief note on the lost object thing. So as we said, the lost object thing is hard. Why is the lost object thing hard? Because you don't know in advance. Right? So Rabbeinu Tam assumes, in the Sefer HaYashar, that is that you do have to return it. It just means that if you have reason to believe it's Amaretz, you don't have to search. You put in a lot of effort. That's all it means. Okay? The Ron says, I don't understand. How could you do it? You don't know if it belongs to Amaretz. He said, it's when you see a shayara. You see like a bus of a, right? A bus full of Amaretz, right? To Amaretz tours, right? And then, you know, a nice camera falls out of the Amaretz tour bus. And you're like, oh, now I don't have to do it because I don't know which Amaretz it belongs to, but it's one of them. So he actually takes it halachically, right? So both Rabbi Yonatan and the Ron take it halachically in different ways, right? Either it's, you do have to return it, but if you reasonably believe it's Amaretz, you don't have to search for them. The Ron says, no, you don't even have to look for them at all, but that's only if you have reason to believe it's Amaretz, if you don't know whose it is. The Meiri, says it's not really about a normal case of Naveda. It's like if you see his donkey wandering off and you realize the Amaretz, you don't have to put in effort. Right? You don't have to, like, chase it down. But interestingly enough, he doesn't pass in the way. He says, Mikol Makom Halacha Shechayv Lachazar Lachazar Achareah, which is interesting because, right, there's another factor which we didn't spend too much time on, but the Meiri is telling you is that not everything is Gemara to be necessarily Paskin-like. Okay? And Rav Elchanan just says he doesn't understand it at all. Right? Because he says, what would be the logic for saying you don't have to return it? That he's not Achicha. If he's not Achicha, then you don't have to give it back, even if you know whose it is. So the notion that you don't have to search for it, but you do have to give it back, he doesn't understand formally, halachically, right? Which might lead you either to say we don't paskin, or maybe it's metaphorical, or something like that. Okay, so to summarize what we've seen, right? We saw an entire blot of very, very complicated Gemaras, which say really horrible things about Amaretz, right? And basically we approached it with different methodologies, and just to summarize, we saw some, like the Riff, who say it's basically literal, but only for very specific Amaretz who commit terrible crimes. So it's literal if you limit that. And we saw that within different stages of the Gemara, it might mean a different type of Amaretz, right? In not marrying an Amaretz, it might be one standard, whereas the Mutal Nachro, stabbing him, is only someone who's trying to murder, right? We saw the Ramban and the like, who just says it's an exaggeration. We saw the Meiri mixes it up a little bit. We saw the Marsha, right, basically we use each one just as a slight metaphor, a slight exaggeration, right? We saw the mystical approach today, right, in the Arizal. Then we saw both in the Reeve and Shuib and extensively the Maharal metaphorical, right, that it's about an Amaretz being physical and being only a human in potential, right, or being an Adam but not a worthy Adam, all types of different very interesting Aristotelian models there. Right, he's only exists in potential, right, and therefore in Lamaisa you can't kill him because he exists in potential, but it's Roi to come doesn't really exist. That is like the most like whatever. I know you like it, right? And that all the things here are about him not really deserving the spiritual plane because he's so physical and the like. And like I said, if you want to see how it works out and everything, you can. I just skimmed through his treatment in Nitiv Olam, but he has yet another treatment that I gave you in Baragola and Perek Aleph and Gimel. And as I said, if you really, 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 really want to see a lot about the Maharal systematic view, I gave you a few, but you could just go on Svaria and look at Hartman's footnotes, where he has hundreds and hundreds of footnotes on this Perek, where he shows you every other place in the Maharal's theory where he develops similar ideas. And then we finished with the Rabbi Kiva. How could Rabbi Kiva say this? Either he was used to be bad and then he was good, right? Or he was angry at them because they were arrogant, or he was angry at them because he was so from. He thought that Talmid Chachamim weren't sincere. And then the lost object we saw, is it really halachic? If it is halachic, why is it halachic? Is it that you don't have to search for them, you don't have to return it at all? Or possibly that it's more metaphorical and the like, because halachically it's really problematic, and therefore the Meiri leading to the conclusion that we don't even paskin like that. I think that is all I can handle today. But at least we finished the sugya, so we can do something else tomorrow.